hello, welcome back to the Glove Podcast. We are back at it again with another intuitive session. This is going to be a fun one. I imagine there will be some downloads involved, or maybe we'll just talk about downloads that have happened recently. But I'm very excited to have with us today Ryan. I will let Ryan introduce himself. Welcome, Ryan. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Gabriella. Yeah. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to try this out with you.
Awesome. Feel free to take a moment to introduce yourself.
Well, sure. I'm Ryan. My name is Ryan Genero, and I just like fancy myself somewhat an inventive and creative person in general. And definitely love the idea and concept, as well as any experiences that I've had with, just like brainstorming with like other intuitive people, where we can just like rant and riff for, long periods of time, such as you, Gabrielle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. And you also love dancing. You're right. A great creative dancer.
Yeah, I do love dancing. And unfortunately, I haven't had a lot of ecstatic dances this year for obvious reasons. And recently we started having just like a few of us dance in our house, like my housemates. Mm-hmm. And look what we're actually doing one tonight.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I've been like, keep moving, I find dancing and movement, it stretches our idea of what's possible. Mm. I think if we're like extend ourselves beyond what our normal functioning is, what our normal day-to-day movements are, it can like expand our thoughts to go beyond our day-to-day as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, if you're dancing in a completely new way and doing a completely new move that doesn't necessarily feel logical or like any other move you've done before, I can see how that would impact your mind to now you're suddenly convinced that there's also a new way of moving your thoughts.
Mm, yes. Yeah. Cause, it's one of those things that, it's like a leap of faith a lot of the times, right? As an, sometimes like to say swing your arm in a certain way and finding it where you land, where you end up, and just like being surprised, allowing yourself to be surprised by that impulse and acting on the impulse, allowing the impulse to move my body. Like, and then trusting that my body will be balanced, it will take care of itself, and where I end up, the position I end up in, or the movement and trajectory I end up in, is going to like open up new possibilities as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really cool way of opening up new possibilities, painting a picture with your body. Dance mm-hmm. is a really beautiful thing. I love dancing. So tell me, what have you been brainstorming lately? Is there anything in particular that you've been brainstorming and have been excited to brainstorm about?
I mean, in a way, I've been brainstorming about all this, like pandemic stuff, and I've been brainstorming mostly about like the necessity for something like manifestation skills and law of attraction, in order for us to like collectively shift into something. For individuals to shift, but also collectively shifting into something. And a big part of that is something I've been processing this year, which is cultivating some kind of faith. Try not to get too afraid or caught up in any kind of fear. Because I find that although those can be very stimulating, like fear and anger can be very stimulating in the moment, and it feels like very relevant and justified, any kind of frustration can be justified, right? If there's like actual interference with our lives, I find like it's interfering with my creativity when I do that. Mm-hmm. If it gets prolonged. So the best thing for me to do is to be, is to enjoy other people's, like, either enjoy other people's creativity, such as, like, okay, see, it's like dancers on Instagram, or just like playing and brainstorming myself, like, any kind of like art or like even just doodling, and making up stories and ridiculous scenes, just out of the blue. Mm-hmm. I find that kind of behavior and vibration that allows the possibility to exist and to be relevant. It makes whatever like suggested future that anyone might be like extremely afraid or extremely angry or having like some kind of conflict focus in their life, especially regarding if people are talking about like the government or talking about like other humans at this time. If there is like too much focus on that conflict, then it's like interfering with like people's natural creativity. And I find that like if I'm more open to new possibilities, and with some kind of like faith that it is still possible, and we don't have to align with whatever narrative or future that is projected or prospected, then we actually like there's power in that. There's mm-hmm. power. There seems to be like it's easier to generate ideas, and it's easy to see how also limiting, very limiting and kind of uncreative certain narratives are and certain futures that are projected are, like, mm-hmm. where, you know, like these like very simple, you know, like lockdown things. It's or even like some of the solutions, it seems, to how we're going to conduct ourselves. I think that there's a lot more creative possibility.
Yeah. Okay. So you're saying, okay. So you're saying, I'm just going to try and paraphrase what you said.
Yeah. Thanks.
You're saying that, we can choose a different perspective on things rather than the perspectives that often emotions like fears bring up for us. And by doing that, it opens us up to different possibilities for various future outcomes. Whereas when we are swimming in fear or sort of distracted by fear or just taken by them, or we're just in a very fearful state, there are very specific fearful outcomes that we can imagine for ourselves, and it's hard to picture any other outcome. So that's where having a different perspective comes in handy, because it empowers us to be open to different possibilities. Is that sort of what you were saying?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We have the option of focusing on a problem. You know, we have the opposite option of focusing on a problem, acknowledging a problem and focusing on it. The issue, there's an issue when we focus on the problem, but we're not focusing on the problem with this idea or thought that a solution to it is possible.
Mm-hmm. Like, gotcha.
especially if it's a better solution than what's presented isn't possible.
Right.
So, and I think it requires us to actually like set the intention, I think, a lot of the time, to say like, okay, well, here's a problem. Here's a current problem, and say it's a real problem. Anything in our lives, like globally or personally, there's a real problem. We can say, okay, this is a real problem. Now, what are we going to do about it? Is there something that like people are currently implementing at this moment or rolling out or suggesting? We don't always have to limit ourselves to what the solutions that are currently presented to us. And we can always keep an open mind as to a better idea, that there is a better solution out there. Because if the history of invention is not evidence enough, there's always a better solution. There's always an upgrade. Any idea that anyone can think of, there's a level up from that. Mm-hmm. So just to get fixated on a solution that's presented to us, even if it feels like unsatisfactory, and if we believe in not believing that there is a better solution, so therefore not thinking about it, that's an issue. One mm-hmm. thing that we can do to expand our minds is to think, to get in the habit of knowing and trusting that there is a better solution than what is currently presented to us.
Mm-hmm. And this is where sort of this faith that you mentioned earlier comes in. So you were saying earlier when you started talking about this, you kind of started off with you've been brainstorming lately around what's going on in the world with this pandemic and stuff. And so everything that you've sort of shared so far, is that in reference to, and obviously this applies to other areas of life as well, but is that in reference to this brainstorming that you've been doing around the current circumstances, like the pandemic?
Yeah.
Cool. Well,
because I've had like certain, just because of people I've spoken with, I'm stimulated. I'm stimulated to think of that. I'm stimulated by the world and what's going on, and also how people responding, and even the suffering that's occurring. Yeah, I'm stimulated by it. And however, I'm not easily willing to accept that current solutions and ideas of what solutions can be in any direction is the best thing, is the best idea. Mm-hmm. And because, well, humans are fallible, people have different kind of influences going on. Not everyone has the same open-mindedness to be able to even level up their own ideas, you know, mm-hmm. or to find a bit better ideas than even their current best ideas. I think mm-hmm. that's something like that's probably practiced with, it was probably practiced with like Tesla and Edison and people like that, or any kind of creative person, any inventive person, I think does that.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, what this brings up for me is just, I was thinking about the many times in my life where I felt sort of, sometimes it felt like pressure, sometimes it felt like obligation or duty, sometimes it felt like that's what I was supposed to do, or I wanted to. I was sort of very emotionally involved in this. And the thing that I'm referring to is in taking on what's going on in the world and wanting to help solve it or solve problems that are there, or, you know, fix it, save it, heal it, change it. I don't know, all of those things. And I know that for myself, I have, you know, in many periods of my life, found myself feeling overwhelmed by that or getting lost in that sort of emotional attachment to fixing or healing or changing things. And now that that's sort of shifted, and maybe this is not a permanent shift for me, maybe I'll go right back to it in 3 years. But currently, I don't relate to that in the same way. And what I mean by that is when we're talking about something specifically like the current pandemic circumstance, I don't feel like it's like my responsibility to fix or change any of it. I don't feel like it's up to me to figure it out. I don't feel like I just don't feel like that weight is on my shoulders. And there's a very interesting for me, and this has been, you know, a relatively recent experience, probably like in the last 2 to 3 years, three max, where I just no longer feel that weight on my shoulders. And it's been a very interesting experience for me because on the one hand, I still, of course, care. And, you know, I do feel compassion and empathy and all those kinds of things. But I think that in the past, my idea of compassion and empathy was an unhealthy one. And what I mean by that is that I thought that in order to be compassionate and empathetic and in order to care for the world, I had to take it on as my responsibility to help change it or help heal it. When it, like for me, what's more true now is that I'm not responsible for the world, nor am I responsible for anyone in it. And my compassion and empathy, you know, is present. I know it's there, and I extend that in whatever ways I can, while also honoring and respecting my own health and well-being. And so, if engaging in something that I think is an extension of compassion and empathy towards something else in life, and in the process of doing that, I'm also harming myself or my mental health or my well-being, that's not real compassion. That's not real empathy anymore for me. And that's sort of where I am now around that kind of thing. And that's why, like, now it's very interesting to be living through this period, and this pandemic is going on, and there's a lot of, I notice, a lot of very passionate opinions around things, and a lot of like it almost seems like I picture it as a lot of people out on a battlefield, and everyone's picked up their arms and their shields and their swords, and they're really like taking on this identity and this outfit and this mask and you know that mask and identity, it's all the beliefs that they have around the pandemic and the what the values that they have and what they feel is right and what needs to happen and what isn't right. And it's a very sort of, it's like everybody is really taking up their arms and really taking up their convictions and going with it. And so it's very interesting for me to be in this period of my life where I have no interest in picking up my arm, and I have no interest in shouting any opinion to anybody. And, you know, like I know I have been that person many, many times in my life where I felt very passionate about something that I felt was a message that needed to be told and needed to be shared. And now that I don't feel that, it's kind of ironic that, you know, we're living through this period where I feel that a lot of that is happening. So it's just kind of been interesting for me. What does that bring up for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like what I noticed. I mean, I've been noticing that to a certain extent in all anything political, especially like online, you know, keyboard warrior type of politics, that kind of thing. It's been going on for a while, and it's definitely more amplified in 2020 for sure. There's like a duality, right? There's like a, you know, it's like a pro mask, anti mask, and et cetera. And it's kind of like seeing the value of both sides, and it seems to be like maybe less popular than just choosing one, choosing one, and then being against the other one. That seems to be prominent, at least online. At least, mm-hmm. So where like one group hates the other group, or like criticizes the other group, and in maybe in hopes of converting them, even though people are never converted by being ridiculed. That's not how humans work generally, especially online. People just like retaliate, and that's it. I what I've noticed anyway. I haven't heard a lot of people being converted to whatever the other side is from some online debate. I find like there's like maybe okay. Here's an idea. I'm just gonna real shoot an idea here. That like, okay, maybe at some core level, people, there is like a collective urge to be clear about who we are as individuals and what we want and what our path is. And I think that energy can be pulled in any direction, and especially a direction that is like either the shiniest or the loudest or has the largest group associated with it. So therefore, you know, it appeals to our need to be part of a larger group, which is also very closely connected to being connected with a higher being, even like God or a higher self. There's that like kind of association. And I think that maybe because there's like a lot of energy, like a calling, like this is like intrinsic calling, like everyone's souls are waking up saying like, choose a thing, go do a thing. It's that can be, if it's not coupled with like the habit of brainstorming and looking at many, many different options or seeing multiple sides to a thing or seeing the value of seeing the value of what's presented and also like opening up to something that you've never even heard of before. I think that like that call or like without that, people can just like pick up the next thing. So just like, oh, I'm gonna take on this side here because this is I'm gonna be this person who says these things online or calls these people this. Now I'm that person. Now I'm just one of many of these people that do that. And it's easier to do something like that. Like, because it's like the closest, maybe it's the closest approximation of what their soul wants. Their soul wants a certain type of identity and expression and purpose and meaning. The closest thing, the closest approximation is like maybe taking on one side or another side, because there's enough overlap of values, or it's implied that there are certain type of values present there, even if there may be a compromise of some other values and therefore an internal conflict. That people are either willingly or like consciously or unconsciously like avoiding acknowledging. So does that make sense?
Kind of, yeah, kind of. So
like what I'm saying is that like people, like when we take up a side, maybe we're taking out on the closest approximation of what our actual soul wants to do as a creative being.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And I'm thinking to add to that, it maybe isn't necessarily that the close approximation, like the similarity between that specific identity or, you know, set of beliefs and what the soul intends to express is not necessarily with the identity or those beliefs. Rather, it's that the soul wants to express itself. It wants to come through to each person involved. And so even if the people are not necessarily getting the message from their own soul, right, what they are getting right is that they're listening to some sort of calling and they're going with it. And that's at least one step closer to, you know, maybe the next round of this whole thing could be, okay, well, in the first round, you know, I started listening to a calling, a deep, you know, urge or yearning or an impulse I had, and I went with it. And now the second sort of round of that, round two, would be, well, now I'm ready to apply that same process to actually, or actually, no, maybe round two would be listening for that soul and trying to discern what the soul is actually trying to say. And then round three would be applying that process of expressing and externalizing that calling from the soul. Does that make sense? So round one would be, you know, the soul is calling you. You don't know what it's saying, but you're externalizing this yearning and this impulse to align yourself with your calling. Then round two is you hear the calling. Now you know what the message is and what the intention is and what that direction is. And then round three is the application of round one, which was to externalize that calling or that yearning or that impulse to round two, which is the message, the clear message that you got from your soul. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I can see how it's a process of going deeper and potentially like individuating further and further to like specific soul calling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe that's what we're witnessing on a sort of larger scale, or at least what we're witnessing on the internet and on social media, particularly mm-hmm. in these sort of social media behaviors and the keyboard warrior dynamics that are happening. Maybe that's what that's reflecting. It's reflecting people listening and following some sort of impulse that's really, you know, activating within themselves, and they're following that, they're applying that, they're externalizing that into the real world and projecting that. So they're making it real, and maybe over time that will turn into, well, what else is there? You know, what other messages are there? Because I'm sure, you know, if we look at it using this context, if we kind of pretend that this is the narrative of the world, mm-hmm. Or one narrative of it, say in about 5 years, you know, this whole pandemic thing is over and people barely talk about it. You know, there isn't going to be an anti-mask versus pro-mask thing going. And so all of the people that kind of took that on, and really identified with that, and then a bunch of other things that they associate with taking on that specific belief, all of that will likely not hold as much weight, and it just won't be as important. So they'll need to replace all of those identities and beliefs that make them feel like they belong to a particular group of people. And when that time comes, well, where are you going to get the replacements? Where are you going to get those new beliefs? And that's where, I guess, you either go to your soul and, you know, go into sort of round three in this hypothetical game that I've come up with, or you take on whatever other beliefs other people happen to be taking on or are kind of, you know, conveniently located around you. So if it's just, now all the anti-maskers or pro-maskers will be tree huggers all of a sudden. And there will be a gradual transition to loving and hugging trees. And maybe people will just take that on because everybody else is doing it.
Yeah, I mean that would be awesome if there were no polarity between those two things. Like, everyone says, okay, yes, let's hug trees. This is a priority. No one's like, we shouldn't hug trees, or, you know, no one's doing that. Everyone's like, yes, of course, obviously we should hug trees. I see that, yes, in 5 years, yeah, people could not be talking about it. It won't be the same groups. It seems like what I feel, like what I'm like, my response to what I've noticed is that, like, there is, there seems to be, like, maybe we could collectively have, like, a baseline of a process, possibly, of, like, well, how do we decide what we value? Do we just react to whatever someone presents us with? because of based on our emotions. Emotions are valuable, sure. They can tell us like when someone we shouldn't talk to someone, or we shouldn't be near someone, or in a certain space. Our emotions can really guide us in certain situations. However, if we don't, we're not able to like look in as to why we have that emotion, whether it's like an intrinsic belief, whether it's true or false, that influences our emotion in that moment and causes us to react in a certain way. If we don't acknowledge that, or if we're not mindful of that, we're just probably just going to be reactionary to the next thing because somebody uses certain emotion inducing words, right, in a certain specific way or a certain context, or we could be potentially manipulated by having negative emotions intentionally stirred up within us by somebody who knows that stirring up those emotions, like such as like guilt or fear, will make us more likely to comply to a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like if we can get to a place, especially collectively. However, I'm working on myself as an individual. I know lots of people who are to not be manipulated, emotionally by just headlines popping up and getting thrown in every emotional direction, and having their thoughts go all over the place. I think it's like if we get to a place collectively where we already know our values, we know what our core values are, and we know what a deal breaker is. We know what the deal breakers are, but like what we're willing to or not willing to comply to, because they go against our core values, such as like, say, our core value is freedom. If our core value is freedom, and we want to, or like freedom and ability to travel and enjoy nature and meet a variety of people, I think if we have that, it's difficult to hold that thought with another contradictory thought that says socializing is bad, traveling is bad, and freedom itself is not a worthwhile attribute of our lives or aspect of our lives. I think it's like there might be some kind of cognitive dissonance or something to hold to those two contradictory thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
not knowing where one ends and the other begins. And I think that's like the place where I think there could be manipulation. But if we know our values, then we can like hold our values, like these things are important to us. For me, it's like it's freedom, right, the ability to travel and meet people, and
mm-hmm. So maybe
creatively.
Yeah, so maybe part of the challenge is in separating our values from beliefs and ideas that we think represent our values. So maybe what's a good practice would be, or something to try out would be, to just take inventory of what those values are, be clear on what they are, and then come up with different scenarios and examples for what those values would look like.
Yes.
Give ourselves, very practical examples. That way we have something to compare other scenarios to. So if we find ourselves in a scenario where we're faced with either a decision and just to stay with the current circumstances of the pandemic, faced with the decision of wearing a mask versus not wearing a mask, we can go back to that list of values and back to those concrete examples for us to look at and decide, well, which decision, wear the mask or don't wear the mask, most reflects those core values. And maybe if we don't do that, or we're not in the habit of really being clear on the way in which our values look like in our day-to-day and how they appear, then we might confuse certain decisions with like our values. Does that make sense? Like we'll think to ourselves that, for example, not wearing a mask or wearing a mask is a representation, or it's symbolic of a value that we have, when in fact it may not be. And if we're not careful about whether or not there is an actual correlation between our values and the decisions that we're making and the beliefs that we're holding, then we might find ourselves, you know, just fighting for beliefs that don't actually align with our true values.
Yeah, for sure. It is really important to clarify our values and clarify those scenarios, and know when something is being compromised. Like know when suggesting something, an idea that supports it, or goes against it. We're much less likely to be manipulated or convinced otherwise with any tactic, any like emotional manipulation tactic that marketers use often. We won't be likely to be manipulated that way, because we already know like what we want. We already know like what our values are, and it'll just like ring, like it'll seem like it'll have, there'll be red flags, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking more in the sense of not necessarily, you know, as a way of avoiding being manipulated or making decisions that are encouraged or influenced by others. I'm thinking more along the lines of we make decisions in our lives because we think that it's either good for us, we think it aligns with our values, we think it's what's best, or we think it'll protect us or serve us in some way. And sometimes those decisions are in fact not in alignment with any of those things. And an example of that is, for example, when we hold this value, or we carry this value that, you know, we're all equal and all worthy and all beautiful and all good enough and we all have potential, etc., you know, that value of just respecting everyone equally, but then we'll go and we'll either avoid doing something, or we will do something because we're afraid that we're not good enough, or we're afraid that we will fail, or we're not entirely sure that, you know, we're worthy of receiving or having that thing that we want to reach for, which is in complete contradiction to that value of, you know, we're all equal and we're all worthy. And so if that's kind of the example that comes to mind for me, and I draw that same parallel with something like, should I wear a mask or should I not wear a mask? Well, what do either of those decisions have to do with my values, and where's the actual correlation with my values? So when I ask myself, well, what are my values? Then my values are, you know, they have more to do with being respectful and kind and, you know, open-minded and those kinds of things than they do with whether or not I wear a mask. Because that's sort of like it's at the end of a very long list of things that I feel represent my values. It's almost insignificant. But I only know that because I can look at my values and say, hey, these are my values, and, you know, wearing a mask versus not wearing a mask doesn't do much for my values. On the other hand, something like, you know, asking for help or asking someone for something, or maybe you've got a crush on someone. I've got a crush on someone, and, you know, I'm afraid of getting rejected, or I want to ask someone for help, but I'm afraid that they won't be willing. And you know, that fear and the hesitation to actually take those steps come from a place that is in contradiction to my value of, you know, everybody's worthy, I'm worthy, therefore I shouldn't have a problem asking for help, and I shouldn't have a problem being okay and being vulnerable to potential rejection, because I know that my worth does not, it is, it goes unaffected. And that's sort of that applies in the same way with masks. I know that my worth and all these other things that are important to me are unaffected by this act of wearing a mask versus not wearing a mask. There's just no correlation. Does that kind of explain where I was going with that?
Yeah, I think so. It's are you saying that, like, in a way people are settling? They're like settling in terms of like the quality of life that they deserve, while saying that they deserve a higher quality of life, but then limiting their possibility to a lower quality of life. So they're contradicting themselves by saying, like, I'm really worthy of, like, all these amazing things and experiences, and so is everybody. However, it's like they actually believe they're maybe not worthy enough to experience it, so they're willing to settle for, like, take what they can get, maybe. Is that what you're saying? In a way, that's how I interpret it, because that's kind of how I see things anyway, that people are limiting themselves. So the best case scenario is maybe whatever the government provides, or whatever, like, whatever corporate or Bill Gates provides or something like that. Like, oh, he's a genius, so therefore, you know, whatever he suggests is probably the best possible idea that human beings can come up with, you know, as a whole. Like, that's the epitome of brilliant solution right there, right? There's nothing better. It can never get better. This is it. This is the download from source right here. This is it. And I think it's like, but if we were, like, really held the values, those values of, you know, like, self-worth, we all deserve a high quality of life, we wouldn't limit ourselves to something that kind of feels like meh. We'd be like, we can do better. We can do better. We can come up with something better. Let's spend a few more hours on this. Let's come up with something better, right? We would do that if we did collectively have that kind of intrinsic self-worth, I think.
I think we would, yes, I think we would definitely always be on the lookout for ways to improve things. I think we, more than that, I think we would be open. I think that we would take the solutions that we have and work with them and use them, and also be open to continue to allow for greater innovation, either with those solutions or with completely new solutions.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and this can definitely apply to the current or a noticeable increase in social media keyboard warfare, as you called it, the keyboard warriors. I imagine that everyone on all sides just wants what they think is good for everyone. Everyone has the intention, or most people have the intention, for a better solution and a better world, and they want good things for themselves and for others. The difference is that everybody has a different idea what that good thing is, or what that good looks like, and so they're all fighting for, I mean, we're all doing this, but we're all fighting for what we think is the best thing for us all, rather than just recognizing that's what we're doing. We are actively all working towards and investing our time and energy and ourselves towards creating, encouraging, and empowering more and more good in the world, good in the way that we perceive good to be. Mm-hmm. And if we, you know, like, in recognizing that, I think there's a possibility for recognizing that everybody else is also doing that. And so, and it, like, maybe that could open up the potential. And this is like just in having conversations with people maybe that have completely like wildly opposite beliefs from you, you know, or from me, and mm-hmm. you're sitting across from them, just recognizing that this person across from us has wildly different ideas, wildly different perspectives, but their intention is the same as mine. So what we have in common is that we both, you know, we all want a good, you know, just and a fair and happy world and peaceful world for everyone. That's what we all want. It's just that we think we're going to get there differently. And I think, and this is where it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier on. I think in the past, for me, I most definitely felt that I needed to help the collective or the world at large get there, and I felt responsible on a sort of collective level. Whereas now, I feel now that my impact is with the people that I interact with. So the people that I come into contact with and the people that are in my ecosystem or all the ecosystems around me, that's where my sort of greatest impact is. It's not in the collective world out there. And you know, and that makes it a lot easier to apply these kinds of things, because if I'm standing in a, you know, a store and there's a person next to me waiting in line, it's much easier to apply, you know, this perspective and this openness to not only their pure intention, but also to working with that person to get to the same destination that we're trying to get to, which is probably just like being nice to each other in that store. Yeah. And like, it's not that mm-hmm. difficult. It's probably what we both want in the store, yeah. you know?
It's a microcosm of world peace.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. Exactly. And as far as the bigger world out there, I mean, kudos to everybody that spends their time, you know, involved in that kind of stuff. Or kudos to all of those people. I think it's wonderful and it's beautiful. It's just not everybody's cup of tea. Now, mind you, that's not to say that I don't also every now and again do shoot out, you know, the random posts, venting on various things. I still do that as well.
I've done that for sure. Not so much recently, but I did more so at the beginning of all this.
Mm, yeah. And then there's nothing wrong with that either. I think that there isn't anything wrong with any of it. I think for me, it's nice to recognize that the intention is good, that I do believe that most people have the right intention. You know, it's different from like how they express it and what they think that, you know, best possible outcome looks like. It is just different from everybody else's. There's just a difference in the expression of it. And I think that's what causes friction more than anything. I don't think it's, you know, that any one opinion is better than the other. It's just that we're not recognizing or taking the time enough to recognize that there is a good intent on, you know, on the other end or the other side of the fence or the grass or whatever.
I think that's a really good point. There is, I think, yeah, just knowing and trusting that the other people, someone has a different opinion than us, even an opposing opinion. Their intentions are good. Yeah, they are doing what they think is right. They have their reasons. And just as like we have our reasons for everything, for what we think and believe, and or what we think is the best solution. It seems like the key is what you mentioned before, which is being open, like being open to new information, new ideas, being open to change your mind. At least, like, maybe not completely, but adjust our thinking at least a little bit in some way, just because we've been exposed to another idea, another opinion that is presented with a slightly new information or slightly different angle and approach to things. I think it's like, if we're open, we can acknowledge our own fallibility that and our own gaps in knowledge potentially, or even like our thinking process is not as refined as it could be as well. And so, which causes us to miss something. And so if we're all open, we can all upgrade and level up. I think it's like when we're completely fixed in knowing that we are, that we're like perfectly right. We're perfectly right, and some other people are totally wrong, regardless of their motivation. I think that will, at the very least, it'll interfere with this like world peace, this environment, this like our local environment, but also the global environment of how we communicate with each other, how we mm-hmm. share ideas, how we accept one another for each other's uniqueness. Like, we all have different perspectives. We're all unique. And we all have different kinds of information that we can bring to the table and bring to the conversation that can have value. Mm-hmm. You know, someone with like a PhD can have all this knowledge, and then like a fifth grader can come along and say something, and the person with the PhD have been like, I never thought of it that way. I never thought of that perspective. Cool. I can integrate that into my own understanding. Now I have a bigger picture, and now I have a clearer picture. And with that clear picture, we can go back and we can look at our values and say like, okay, well, how do some of these ideas, how does this person's perspective and some of their values and their ideas, how do they align with my values? And then there can be like a common ground. And so instead of focusing on all the differences of like, well, I have a PhD, you're in grade 5, nothing in common. Well, maybe there is something in common, right? Maybe there's like a certain idea and a value that's there mm-hmm. that generates ideas, that stimulates the imagination to come up with ways that it can be expressed. And once there's like this kind of like flooding in, like opening the floodgates of possibilities of way this value, this core value can be expressed, then anything else that might be limiting to that, it becomes like more like solid, whereas this infinite possibility of expression of this value, because of all these different ways of doing it and brainstorming, it's like water. It can find its way through and it can continue on down the river. Like it's like a dam with a leak. So I think it's like finding the common ground and the common values and focusing on the things that we actually have in common. It's will allow us to find ways to express it. And so everyone collectively can benefit because their value is being supported. The same mm-hmm. value is being supported. And then like anything that might interfere with it can be immediately mm-hmm. recognized and then tweaked so it doesn't interfere with it as much.
Yeah.
Or it's as reduced as much as possible. And I think maybe there have been that's been kind of collectively experimented with. As long as we don't get lazy, as long as we don't get lazy and become complacent with a new normal of any kind, and then just go, okay, this is, you know, this is temporary. It's a stopgap measure or something. It's like, this is fine for now. However, it's still very valuable to go like, what do I actually want? Oh yeah, freedom. You remember freedom? Yeah, that was awesome. Everyone likes that, right? Okay, so let's see if we can like tweak things so we can like max out the freedom, max out the interaction, the socializing as much as we possibly can and limit the harm as much as we possibly can. And find that, find a ratio, find it like a the sweet spot, you know, find the sweet spot. And that can be a, that can be applied to any value and mm-hmm. any idea where they're like polarized opinions, right?
Yeah. I'd love to add to that, but just a sidebar. I just want to say, I do acknowledge that, you know, I've been using words like they, groups of people, or whatever, anti-maskers, pro-maskers, sort of like this vague concept of just people out there, and so I'm taking a moment to just say, you know, I acknowledge and recognize that I am just like this groups of people that I'm referring to, or they.
We are they too.
I am they too, and I know that I'm just as opinionated, just as stubborn, just as, you know, emotionally involved with my own perspectives and opinions about things. It just so happens that, you know, my perspective is like that, you know, I don't want to pick either side, or I don't want to pick a perspective, you know, but that itself is a side, that itself is a perspective. So I just felt that it was important to say that, you know, there, I don't think there's any escaping it unless you are Buddha or, I don't know, Christ, or, you know, someone who has reached some sort of an entirely different heightened state. I think for the most part, all of us on this planet we're expressing the same sort of impulses and habits and patterns in different ways, in uniquely creative different ways. And some look more similar to others, and some are very unique, and that's cool and all, but it doesn't change that, in my opinion, reality is that we're all cut from the same cloth, emotionally, mentally, psychologically, and, you know, we're suffering the same, you know, we're suffering from the same things, and we derive value from the same things. We are rewarded by the same things for the most part. So yeah, that I just wanted to clarify that sidebar. That said, I wanted to add, I think I agree with what you're saying. And I think maybe the sort of another key part that's missing is communication. Mm-hmm. Not only with others, but also with ourselves. I think maybe a lot of the frustration and, you know, the sort of ideas and beliefs that we hold on to, and the identities that we hold on to, and we express them and externalize them and project them, you know, maybe our projections are trying to tell us something else about ourselves. Like maybe there are specific things that we're afraid of, or things that we need more of, or we're looking for. Like, for example, in the context of this pandemic, maybe a lot of it is rooted in people not feeling safe and secure due to all the stuff that's going on. And because that sense of safety and security is now, you know, is now under threat, you know, we're grabbing onto anything that makes us feel just slightly more secure or slightly more safe. And for some people, that might look like grabbing onto everybody's got to wear a mask. And for other people, that might look like grabbing onto we shouldn't wear masks. It's wrong. And you know, and for some people like me, it's grabbing onto I don't want to be part of this conversation. You know, like what I'm trying to say is that maybe there are other things underneath the surface that are actually driving our actions and driving our sort of impulses, and maybe those things are just our basic needs for, you know, a sense of belonging, a sense of security,
a sense of safety.
Yeah, connection, affection, a sense of like love. Maybe it's just those basic needs, because we're living in such a time where a lot of that feels like it's under threat, where we're acting out in a way that we feel. And that goes back to like the closest approximation. We're acting out in the way that feels it like to us feels like it's the best way to deal with these needs of ours, or helping us get those needs. And so if we're aware of what they are, where our actual feelings are coming from and what we're actually afraid of and what we actually need, and then couple that awareness with communication skills and being able to communicate that to other people, rather than saying, hey, you're wrong, you should do this, or I'm right. And, you know, maybe what we need to be saying to each other, for example, is, hey, there's a lot of stuff going on, and I'm scared that, you know, I'm not going to be safe in, you know, 3 months or a year. I'm scared that, you know, I'm just scared. I'm not feeling safe. I'm not feeling secure. And, you know, like, that's how I'm feeling. And then maybe the other people will say, oh, I'm also feeling scared. I'm also feeling like my safety or sense of security is under threat because of everything that's going on. And then now we're not looking for ways to get the other person to fix it, or get the other person to make us feel safe or secure, or fight the other person because we think they are the cause of it. Now we're just recognizing that we're feeling like these inherent needs of ours are under attack, and we just want to figure that out. And then maybe we can figure it out together.
Yeah, we can find it. We can create a win-win, a synergistic solution.
Mm-hmm.
We acknowledge, like, what is the problem? Like, what are the things we're really freaking out about?
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point. Because it's like, I mean, we're all projecting into the future in some way. So, you know, if we project into the future and we see something scary, then we'll be like, okay, I have to avoid that thing in some way. Or we'll have, like, this scary association with a scary future associated with certain people, right? Certain people we'll see them as a threat. So, but finding that, like, root thing of, like, yes, I'm insecure about the future. I feel like there won't be, I won't be able to connect with my family in the future, or I won't be able to date, or I won't be able to go to a party, and all these things that are really important to me. I won't be able to, like, work in this way in close proximity to people that I value. And I think it's like saying things like that is much more vulnerable than people being angry, because people can be angry and they can, like, yell and scream and call each other names. That's not really going to connect. It's not going to connect. It's not going to win support. It'll be like an echo chamber generally. So the people that already believe that might chime in. But if we're saying, like, we're actually, like, genuinely concerned, then maybe the people that we think maybe our opposition could, at the very least, we, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Can assure these people who may feel that we oppose them, assure them that we want to find a solution to that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't necessarily stop. We won't stop until we find a solution. Or we think this is the solution, and this is why we think it's the solution. We mm-hmm. think that if we do this thing in 2 years, it'll suck for 2 years or 1 year, another year, whatever. We can assure people that, yes, ultimately that is the goal. That is the goal, and that is the intention. And we believe that this is the quickest way to get there, right? I think if people said stuff like that more, like, we understand, we think this is the quickest way to get there. And someone's like, oh, okay. Well, I also have a very similar value. I think that this is the quickest way to get there. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, why do you think that way is better or more efficient than this way? And then we can brainstorm why. Because maybe I have an idea that you can integrate into your plan that makes your plan better. Even though I don't necessarily agree with your approach, but if your approach is awesome, it's like, okay, well, that means maybe it's falling short and I can help improve it. Just like you can maybe help improve my idea, even though my approach is not ideal to you. You know what I mean? Because or at least we're agreeing. We want the same thing and we're trying to get there as quickly and like painlessly as possible.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Mm-hmm. Let's take a moment, if you're up for it, to be vulnerable for a second.
Okay.
That maybe we can both share what those, you know, maybe those core feelings are, or what's at the root of feelings and different experiences that this pandemic has brought on for us. Hmm. Did you want to go first, or did you want me to go first?
I can go first.
Go for it.
Well, I did have a lot of anger at first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could say it was like toward government, feeling like decisions were the decision to like close things down, and especially shut down my precious ecstatic dances.
Mm-hmm.
That I went to every week. That was a big trigger for me. And I felt like a little bit of disdain for people that were so willing to just like end. Stop everything so easily, rather than like, you know, stop everything so easily and so readily without any end in sight, or without any plan or cutoff as to like what's tolerable, what's not.
Right.
And it seemed like it fell off to me. It just fell off, and it felt destructive. And then hating people, and like that idea of like, you know, hating people also fell off. Hating people that were like trying to like. They want to protect their family members, right? They want to protect their vulnerable or immunocompromised family members, and thinking those were people who were annoying, and like contributing to a totalitarian regime or something.
Mm-hmm.
That really didn't feel good either.
Mm-hmm.
That felt like very toxic within me, and I still think like the. Like, as we've been discussing, the approach, the process has a lot of room for improvement. That's for sure. And even our own mindfulness as individuals and as a collective has a lot of room for improvement. I find that like lately I've been praying and doing like a visualization that everybody has like, their chest is glowing and we're surrounded by this glowing shield on earth, and which is rejuvenating everybody and making everybody feel safe and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that I use that as like, here's my vision of the future. And I try to feel in the present, because it allows me to give like a supporting vibe and energy to anything positive that wants to come through in anybody on earth, and let things unfold beautifully, rather than fixating and getting stuck on doing things like burning bridges, like burning communication bridges with people, or completely writing people off as like unhealthy or toxic or like sheep or something, right? That doesn't align with my values Okay. If I'm going to be honest, it doesn't align with my values of like, I think everyone's like, everyone has potential genius within them, way beyond what they're currently probably living and experiencing on a day-to-day basis. Everyone has so much potential. And sometimes we just need to believe in each other. Mm-hmm. So I've been shifting more into like letting that be more the dominant of like, you know, if we like support people in going through whatever process they're going to, and whatever steps they need to go through in terms of their thinking to get to a certain place, we need to create like a safe space, if you will, for that to happen. Whereas constantly contradicting people or opposing people, it could steer them, or any of us could be steered in a direction that may not fully resonate with us, but because it is opposite of this person who's antagonizing us and who is unlikable in that moment because they're doing that, it seems like, okay, people will accept that as being in alignment with our values. When really, it's not necessarily in alignment with our values. It's just like contradicting the opinions of this person who's antagonizing us, and which is its own distraction from our source, or from our higher calling, and requires like deeper navigation. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on just like praying and setting good intentions. Mm-hmm. For the world and for myself.
That's awesome, especially that visualization that you shared. That's a very beautiful thing to be doing. Thank you for doing that. That's awesome. Very, very cool. As for me, I think I would say that, yeah, definitely I have certainly in the year 2020 felt a lot of anger. On many occasions, anger has definitely been part of it. Mostly the first half of the year, not so much the second half, a little bit of the second half, but mostly, well, you know, maybe it was mid-year. I'm not entirely sure. I do know that there have been moments where I felt just very angry. You know, not necessarily at what was going on around the pandemic, just angry at other things that were surfacing or kind of amplified or highlighted that brought on a lot of anger for me. That and a sense of, you know, I guess that goes back to the sense of security or safety, which for me, ironically, has never been something that I really believed was ever really a thing. But I kind of always assumed that it was just an illusion of a thing, or that most things, you know, were an illusion of that. But it's definitely has, you know, reminded me of how important those things are, and also reminded me how important connections are, and social connections, and, you know, human touch and human affection, these very basic needs that I think, you know, I took for granted. I think that, you know, I've what in many ways what this year has shown me is like it's been sort of like a light shining onto all of the things that I'd forgotten to look at, and one of them being, you know, taking human connection and social connection for granted to the degree. You know, it wasn't like I'd taken it for granted very much. What I'm saying is that there's a lot more gratitude and a lot more a much deeper recognition that is now present for those basic needs, and my idea of basic needs has shifted because I now see, you know, that there are things that I genuinely miss. And you know, want and need that are difficult to continue to have during this time. A lot of anger and that sense of security kind of feeling, like not knowing, just not knowing what's going to happen, or what it's going to look like in 2 to 3 years, and not knowing which direction we're going in. That definitely for me has brought on those emotions of feeling like there's a lot of uncertainty, and I just want to feel safe. I just want to feel okay. Like that is all I want. I don't care which way it goes. I just want things to be okay. And that's what it brings on. At my core, I think that's sort of like the thing that I feel in my heart is just, I just want to feel okay and safe and loved and connected. A lot of these sort of circumstances sometimes throughout this year have created moments in which, I questioned whether or not I was going to get that or have that, or if that was going to be, compromised at some point. It's definitely, been an interesting year, but I'm really glad that we got to take a moment to just sort of do that. I think that vulnerability is a beautiful thing. And thank you for doing that with me. I'm a believer in vulnerability. It's a beautiful way to make, be seen and be heard and share in that. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Ryan.
You're welcome, and thank you. Thank you for sharing and being vulnerable. Thanks for inviting me to talk to you today.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was an awesome podcast. Maybe we'll do it again sometime. I know we went over an hour here today, but it was definitely a pleasure. And thank you for being a guest on the show. And that was another intuitive session here on the Glove Podcast with Gabrielle Love and Ryan. That was an awesome podcast. Lovely conversations. I'm so, so glad we got to be vulnerable at the end there. I think that sort of, for me, that felt very grounding at the end of that podcast, because I was noticing myself. I could just hear myself saying things like they and these groups of people, and I was beginning to feel not very good about it. I wasn't feeling good about it, and I was noticing it. And I think that at the end, the opportunity to be vulnerable for both myself and Ryan it felt good. It kind of felt like it's hard to explain. What I'm really trying to say is that I am feeling remorse for having expressed perspectives that maybe potentially could feel alienating to some people, or could feel like it creates the separation between different people, which is not my intention. And I don't feel good about it, and I guess I'm just expressing remorse, but I'm glad we got to be vulnerable at the end there, because that sort of felt like it brought us back to the present, and it grounded us back into the present, rather than this headspace where we think we know what we're talking about. And sometimes we do know what we're talking about, but I know that sometimes my intuition tells me that the things that I am saying could potentially cause more harm than good. And for that, I am sorry. But thanks again to Ryan for joining me today on the podcast. Thank you for all of you listening. Thank you for all of the support, for sharing this podcast. yeah, I look forward to the next podcast, and maybe you will be the guest. Maybe the next guest will be you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, with lots of love. Until next time.